Hello everyone and welcome to Planet FM, Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name is Siobhan and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing this meeting this morning. Can you please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Today we have some members from Canada and America. They are all members attending the Birds of a Feather International Convention and have just flown in today from other countries, so we are very lucky to have them joining our meeting today. Our speakers today are Scott, Bill and Dick. And if I could get you to start off the sharing this morning, please, Scott.
All right, my name is Scott, I'm an alcoholic.
my sobriety date is June 1988. Started drinking when I was in college. As a matter of fact, I really didn't have my first drink until my very first week of college. And from that point on, it helped me fit in, like a lot of us need that kind of liquid encouragement. And it progressed from there into a fraternity house and things like that. But I was lucky to be involved in the ROTC program at the university I was at. And growing up and being in college in the late 60s, there were a lot of drugs and everything around, but I was so afraid of doing that because I didn't want to lose any privileges being in ROTC, because I was told that finish the program and I could become a pilot and go into the Air Force, which really appealed to me. So I stayed away from drugs, and alcohol was my release. They didn't seem to be too concerned about people drinking at the time. But I just started drinking then, and it progressed from there, just like it does with everyone else. Eventually, I did get into the Air Force, where, again, none of us used drugs or marijuana or anything like that at the time, because it was very fearful that it would affect our career. But it always seemed like alcohol, not a problem. You can do whatever you wanted. You can go to the officers' club and get drunk, and nobody seemed to bother you. Some of them, guys who got through, they did all right. But someone like me, in that environment, I flourished with alcohol, and my alcoholism progressed. I did not know it at the time. And as I look back in my Air Force time, which was really 6 years, there were some instances that it caused me to have disciplinary problems, but I never really concerned myself too much about it, because I always seemed to get out of it. I always seemed to have commanders or superiors that seemed to gloss over the fact that I may have been acting inappropriately, and I always seemed to get away with it. And so I thought, no big deal, everything's fine. After 6 years, I was lucky to get hired by the airlines, and my drinking did not stop. It got worse, of course, like for all of us. I was married at the time, and eventually things started to get really bad with my wife. And I'll never forget the day that she came to me, and she said these exact words, and I'll never forget them. And she said, "Scott, I'm going to go get help for myself. You can come if you want." And it was at that moment that I realized, you know, the jig is up. You know, something is really serious here. She no longer worried about the both of us together. She was concerned about herself, and she wanted to go get help for herself. So she stopped enabling me on that day. And as I look back and I think about it, I realized I was a early marriage, two young children. I didn't want to lose any of that. And so I decided to get help. And she said, well, there is a rehab to go through. And I said, all right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I said, I'll go through rehab, but you got to promise me we can't tell the airline that I'm doing this because I'm going to get fired. Now, I did not know at the time that at that time there were programs where the airlines did support you. I didn't know that because of the fear. And so I agreed to do a outpatient program, which was really not very effective for me, frankly. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I go for an hour, and then after that, you're back to the real world, and it just didn't affect me very much. Until the time it started getting worse and worse again, and I finally had the opportunity, finally through the help of another airline, and I was able to enter rehab. And again, I'll tell you another instance where it was an epiphany for me, and it was the day that I showed up in front of the door of the facility. And again, I'm very lucky to have had the chance to go to rehab and to be supported by my employer and the airline and the government. A lot of people don't have that opportunity to go through rehab, but I did, and I'm grateful for that. But outside that door, before I walked in, I specifically remember saying to myself, you know, let's just let it happen. Let's not fight it. Let's get on in there and see what's going to happen to me. And I went in there, and I let myself go, and I relaxed, and I got out of the program initially from day one. I remember seeing guys in there for 1 to 2 weeks fighting it every single day and fighting it. And by about maybe the second week, they were finally starting to get it. But I had started to get it from the very beginning, and that's what was significant in my situation. So that's what happened to me. And since then, I got involved with my airline's pilot assistance program, and I ended up helping other pilots. And I was very lucky to have been able to do that because it helped me stay sober because I was helping other people. So I'm 78 years old now. I've been sober for quite a long time, and I can tell you specifically that I will never be able to have had the career I had and help the people I've had if I had not gotten help from the very beginning, way back in the day. So if there are people out there struggling, and if you're a professional, I don't care what kind of professional you are, doctor, lawyer, physician, pilot, anything, there are meetings and groups out there that they can help you, and I would recommend going to any of them and getting involved. That's basically my story. But I am forever grateful to be able to say that I am in the situation where I can say I have been not sober for days, weeks, or months, or years. I have been sober for decades now, and I'm very proud of that fact. And I'm sober today because of the two other guys sitting here with me, people like that, who I get to share my experience, strength, and hope with when I get together with them. So that's pretty much about it for me. I hope that help somebody to what I said, and I'd like to pass it along to the next guy, if that's okay.
Thank you so much, Scott, for sharing that story. And now if I could ask you, please, to share Bill.
Hello, everybody. My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's June the 5th, 2017. And I'm very grateful that I made that decision. It took me some time to accept it and appreciate it. But I have an old timer in my group. He used to say that we end up in Alcoholics Anonymous for one of three things. It can be all three, but it's your lover, your liver, or the law. I had more than one consequence, and you know. So I'll start with when I was a child. I was a child of. One parent was a first generation in America, the other one was a second generation, and they grew up in a very ethnic Chicago, Illinois, and I heard many languages at the dinner table, and I'd moved about four times by the time I was four or five, and then I ended up in the Deep South, and my parents were, they say there's a difference between a Yankee and a damn Yankee. A Yankee will come south but he'll go back home. But a damn Yankee stays, and my parents loved the South. But we were always just a little bit different. I got teased because my grandmother talked funny, or my parents were from a different place, and I didn't know that differences would affect me so much. My family were performers. You did well at what you did. You played sports. You did well. You did well. And it was a family of secrets also that you keep the secrets in the family and you don't share them with anybody. There's a little bit of dysfunction in my family. I didn't know it as a child, but I was called on to make some adult decisions as a child. And so as things went on, I started to believe in the self-reliance and the rugged individualism, because that always got me through. I could always study harder and do well, or work harder and do well. My father was an alcoholic, and he was very respected in the beginning. In the middle, he had some tough times, and he died very young. I was 16 years old when my father died, and in that kind of a culture that I grew up in, it was more of a European than a U.S. that they tend to pick somebody to be the leader of the family, and I was picked to be the leader at 16, and I made a lot of adult decisions that probably would have been better off not doing, but I did well in school. I did well in college. I was in difficult environments, engineering, they would say, look to the left, look to the right, and that guy won't be here at the end. Pilot training was the same way. But all those places, it was a mentality, even in my family, is you work hard, you get to play hard. And the consequences weren't as big back in the 70s and the 80s as they are now, but there were some. And, I hear that we can, in the beginning, drinking is all fun and no consequences. In the middle, there's a consequence or two, but you tend to overcome them, and at the end, they all seem to pile up on me. That's what my experience was. I was able to get out of my first consequence because if I had the consequence, I couldn't go in the military. The judge thought I'd be better off in the military than with the consequence, and I got out of it. And things happen in 5 and 10 year increments. Things happened to me very fast. I was in the National Guard, so I didn't have to leave home, and I went to work in college at 18, loading airplanes for a company that wasn't supposed to exist. It was just on the verge of bankruptcy. I did it because they would pay for college, and it was fun, and I could maybe get some experience and go fly for a bigger airline. By the time I was able to fly for them, I was young. I was 25, and the company had become a good company. It wasn't by anywhere near as big as it became. But I thought I was going to get to fly to California, and that would be a far, far place away. And the first year I was flying to Europe, and in the next 5 years I went to South America and around the world. And the company just doubled in size every 2 or 3 years. I had most of the captains at that airline were just out of Vietnam, and they were in their mid to late 30s. And they came home, and they worked hard and played hard, and we all subscribed to that, and it worked. It was very good. I had to prepare for work, so I didn't drink, and I didn't drink at work, but about the other third of my life, if I was awake, that would happen. I had a marriage that failed. I said that would never happen, and it did. And I got to be in my 50s, and I didn't look as – I wasn't as good a shape as I used to be, and I wasn't as fast or smart as I used to be, and I was living by myself. And I'd become so isolated that I could be isolated in my bedroom at home, or I could be isolated in a football stadium of 100,000 people, and I would still feel like I was the only one. I was very I got to a point where I had some health problems that required medication that caused me not to be able to fly anymore. And that's when I found out that my total identity was what I did. I wasn't anything except my job. And in the town that I lived in, they would say he used to be a pilot, which was very, very distressing. I ended up having some consequences with the law, and they told me that if I would go to rehab, that I could get out of jail sooner. And I thought that might be a good idea. And I went to a place that we were afraid of when the airline had a program, but we were afraid to go there. But I went, and I found out it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I was able to get healthier again. I was able to learn how to stay in the present. When I live in the past, I'm full of shame and grief. And when I look to the future, I get anxiety and fear. But the only time that I could find that presence at the end of my drinking was when I wasn't drinking and I was flying airplanes. When I was younger, it was when I played sports. I could tune out the world, but the rest of the time I was pretty busy in the head. Since I got sober, you know, the 12th step tells us, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, we do two things. We help other alcoholics, and we practice these principles on all our affairs. I find that practicing these principles on all my affairs can be much more difficult than helping other people. But that's what we do at the Birds, too. We're usually the front line. When I was working and I was a union guy, I get the first phone call where the wife threw him out, or they went to jail, or they had the DUI, or the, you know, whatever scared them. And I would have to tone down my excitement for them, because if they would do what we asked them to do, I would know their life would change dramatically. But I couldn't tell a guy that was in that situation, man, this is great for you. I had to just sort of let him experience it. But when you get to work with that guy on the worst day of his life, and then you see him when he gets out of rehab, and then you see him 6 months and a year left down the road, it's an amazing thing. I was taught that I wasn't just a pilot. I had to learn how to, you know, they told me I could do whatever I wanted in the cockpit, that they weren't going to change that, the control and all that stuff. But when I opened the door, I had to turn into a human being and be a father and a husband, a brother, a son, a neighbor. And they gave me the tools to participate in life again. And those tools have made my life much more enjoyable. I used to go to bed and say, "Dear God, if I don't wake up, that's okay." And I'd wake up and say, "What were you thinking?" Now I wake up and say, "Thank goodness I got another day. It might be the worst day of the month, but I get to see what happens." And every night I say, "Thank you for one more day." So it went from a life of existence and to a life of excitement and looking to the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that share, Dick. That was great. Bill, now if I could get you to share your story, please.
Dick.
Yeah, hi. My name is Dick, and I am an alcoholic. As you mentioned, we're here visiting New Zealand. I flew down from Canada. For two reasons, believe it or not, I came all over here to attend an AA convention. And I'd never been to New Zealand, so it was great to come and visit and see your wonderful country and go to an AA convention at the same time. This is what we do. So my story, I like to start my story at the beginning, and the beginning for me is I'm one of those people that I believe that I was born an alcoholic. My father was an alcoholic, my mother was an alcoholic, and both sides of the family, when you shake the family tree, a lot of alcoholics there. And so I believe I got a fair start from, I inherited it. There are people that don't think that, but that's what I do. So my early memory as a young boy was my father, who was an alcoholic. And in those days, people got paid on Friday afternoon in cash. And by Monday, the money was gone, and he had spent the weekend drunk. If he was able to show up for work Monday morning, he got paid again the following Friday. But I remember he was always changing jobs because he would never make it to work on time. And as a result, we were pretty poor people. I didn't know it then, but I look back on it now, and there was never any money around because he blew it all. And so my impressions of my father as a young boy were not good. I really looked at him, and I really disliked what he was doing. I could see that this alcoholism was destroying him and the family, and all of our problems were a result of his drinking. Anyways, when I was about 10 years old, he went to work in a camp, a remote camp. And I think the reason he went to work there was because that was his way of staying dry. There was no alcohol in this camp or any that might get smuggled in, but it was limited, so he could go and work there and stay sober. So he would only come home on holidays and things like that. Unfortunately, he died when I was only 14 years old, so for those last 4 years, I really didn't have much to do with him. Well, coincidentally, when I was 14, was also the first time that I was introduced to a large amount of alcohol. In those days, teenagers, where I lived, I had an older brother who had a friend who had an older brother, you know, and getting alcohol was not difficult. It was easy for us kids. So this night, I got a whole bottle of wine, and I drank the whole thing, and I got really drunk. I got sick. The whole scene, puking on my shoes, you know, and all that, went home. My mother was concerned. I told her I'd gotten food poisoning, you know, and I went to bed. I woke up in the morning with this horrible hangover. Now, most people with an experience like that would say, wow, that was awful. I'm never going to do that again. But not me. I said, wow, that was awful, but I can't wait to try it again, because next time it was going to be different. I was going to drink slower. I would buy a better type of wine, and I would eat some food and all of these things. So from my very first experience, I started trying all these solutions so that I could drink moderately. And as a young teenager, every time myself and my friends, we got together, we started to drink, it was always drink till you got really drunk. So by the time I was in my late teens, I was already beginning to worry about this. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm going to have to start being more careful here. You know, the same saying kept coming up. Next time it's going to be different. Next time I won't drink so much. But I did. And every time I started, I ended up with the same result. So it wasn't like I didn't know that drinking too much was bad. I had seen it as a young boy. And I was already beginning to think, by the time I was in my early 20s, I was really starting to be concerned. And myself and some of my friends, we went to that movie, Days of Wine and Roses, if you remember that. And I sat there through that whole movie, and I was shocked, because I could see myself. I could see what was happening to me. And we came out, and our friends, they said, let's go and, you know, get a few drinks. I said, no, I got to go home. I'm sorry, I'm not going. And I went home, and I thought, man, I'm going to have to clean up my act, or I'm going to be like this. And I was, I think, 21 or 22 at this time. So I was well aware that I was on a bad road. But next time, it was going to be different. I would not do that again next time. So for the next 20 years, every time I drank, the same result. And then I would stop for periods, maybe a few days, maybe a few weeks, until I felt better. And I thought, yeah, I've got this under control. But I never did. It was always the same result. I missed that. I also went and joined the Air Force when I was 18 years old, and they were nice enough. I was right out of high school. They were nice enough to teach me how to fly airplanes. And here I was in the Air Force, and the social life in the Air Force, as Scott had mentioned, revolves around alcohol. You could go and party all you wanted. It was a badge of honor to get really drunk at a mess function. So I fit right in there. That was perfect for me. I stayed in the Air Force for 10 years, and then I went and got a job at an airline. And here was the same thing. Oh, new job, you know, you got to be careful, you know, don't drink too much, you know, and be on your best behavior. And so on days off, I tried to, you know, limit my drinking and all of those things, because next time it was going to be different. Well, it didn't. It just continued on and on and on. One day, after many more years of this, My wife and I were having a cordial discussion one morning about my behavior from the night before, and she said to me, "I want you to promise me that you won't ever do this again." And I said, "No, I won't do that." And she said, "Yes, you have to promise me. You have to promise," because she believed that if you made a promise, you had to keep it. And I said, "I'm not making that promise." And she said, "Well, why not?" And I said, "Because I've made that promise so many times already, I know I can't keep it." And I didn't realize until I went to my first AA meeting that there was my acknowledgement of step one. I now knew I could not keep my promise. I could not stop. I had to do something about it. And I did shortly after. I made an appointment to go and see the company doctor. I went in to see him. I told him the problem. And he handed me a note with a phone number. And he said, "I want you to phone this guy after you get out here," which I did. And it was a guy who took me to my first AA meeting that very night. So I walked in there, and here, this was a meeting of pilots and aviation professionals that we had. And I walked in there, and this guy said to me, "Here's a chair. We've been saving it for you." And I thought they really had, that it was my chair. They knew I was coming. And that was, you know, how my reputation was for drinking. So anyways, that was 36 years ago, and I'm still here. I'm still going to meetings, and I'm so grateful that I made that decision that day to do it. And here I am, and thank you for having us. This is wonderful.
Thank you so much, Dick, and sorry for getting the names mixed up. It's been a real surprise that I had these guests here today from Birds of a Feather. As I might have explained, they are from an aviation group of people in sobriety who are still continuing to fly and support each other internationally through this group. So incredibly grateful for a really rich contribution to our weekly podcast. That's all we have time for today. So thank you to all of you, to Scott, Dick and Bill. And we are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we all please close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
Auckland Council has the goal of zero waste to landfill by 2040. That means recycling, composting, reusing and repurposing materials. Here's another zero waste tip on Planet FM. Waste to landfill per capita in Auckland has decreased since 2010, but we still have a long way to go. Existing services to reduce waste to landfill include using your recycling bin properly. Common contaminants include soft plastics, green waste and general household rubbish. A total of 147,000 tonnes was saved from landfill services in 2024. Find out all the info at wastenothing.co.nz.
planetaudio.org.nz. Your platform for community connection, from podcasts to radio shows. We give you Auckland and worldwide access to create shows that connect you with your community. With brand new studios and expert support, we make it easy for you to create meaningful, professional broadcasts. Share your culture, tell your story, or spark conversation. Your voice matters. 104.6 Planet FM.
Hello, kia ora, my friend. I'm Susie Cato, inviting you to join me for New Zealand's favourite